Accession number 20362, reel 5.
Tom Cattle, reel 5.
The divisional commander decided that we could do without the anti-aircraft battery, and this was a means of trying to bring the infantry battalions up to some kind of strength. But of course they would need quite a bit of training. And so this is what we had. We were reinforced by gunners from the anti-aircraft battery. Of course we had to start training again because, I mean, this wasn't the end of it. We still had to go on right the way down through Burma. And this was more or less the beginning, I suppose you would call it. And so we had to start training these gunners because there's a lot of difference between gunnery work and infantry work. And so we were climbing hills and trying to get them into shape, you know, and introducing them to the skills of an infantryman and that. And it took quite some time. The advance was, of course, still going on, and it was then decided that the 2nd Division had to take over again and take their turn. We moved, started to march. We had a long way to go now because we understood that the West African 11th Division, I think it was, had pushed on down the road now and had gone down through the Kabul Valley and had reached the Chinwin River. And so we had quite a few miles to go. We marched and we were ferried, and we marched and were ferried by trucks as we went on down through. Eventually we got down to a place called Yazagio, which is this side of the Chinwin River. The West Africans were still out in front and were making a bridgehead across the Chinwin River. And we knew that once they'd done that, then we would pass through them and continue on down through. We dug in at Yazagio, and they decided that we should have our Christmas there. I can always remember it because they brought some bottles of spirits up for the officers, and the other ranks had beer. And we were in our little foxholes there. We dug foxholes for individual people, and so that we could have some in case we were. There were still a lot of Japs about, you know, you never knew where they were going to turn up because they were still retreating, and quite a lot had been left behind. And they were still able to kill you, and they weren't worried about dying themselves. They knew that it was the end for them. And so they were still wandering about and doing what damage they could. And so we still had to be watchful. Anyway, we had our Christmas on the 17th of December because we knew that we were pulling out the next day to continue the advance. And it was, I suppose, it was a memorable Christmas that I don't think I want to spend too many like it, because we were wondering what was going to happen. We were still a long way to go, and a lot of Japanese to get rid of. And so the next day we pulled out. By this time they made the bridgehead across the Chinwin, and they put the Bailey Bridge over, which I understood was the longest bridge, Bailey Bridge in the world at that time. And anyway, we marched through over the Bailey Bridge on the Chinwin and took over from the 11th West African Division. We continued our advance on down through. The jungle was beginning to thin out a bit now, and it was more flat. We'd left the hills and mountains behind us, I think, and it was more getting past the monsoon, and it was drier and getting more dusty rather than mud and water. We pushed on down through. I got an idea. Our next objective was down through Shwebo and Yeo. Now we knew, although we didn't see them at all, we knew that the 19th Indian Division was somewhere on our left-hand side and was somewhere in the area advancing on our left-hand side with us as we went down through. And it was sort of a race between them and us to get into Yeo and Shwebo. There was nothing, as I would call, real battles. We were still being fired on by the Japs and bumping them in different positions that they dug in, but nothing too serious, and we were able to overcome them and push on down through. We were still taking casualties, obviously, we were bound to, but it was they weren't dug in as we'd known them before. And so we were able to push on quite steady pace. We were coming across, on the way down, just over the Chinwin, we were coming across a lot of vehicles that had been damaged by our retreating forces back in 1942 that had been left and couldn't be brought out because they'd run out of fuel or couldn't cross the Chinwin or something like that, and had been destroyed with guns, and they were all alongside the road. We got on through and went on down, and our next obstacle really was the Irrawaddy, which we knew was going to be quite a formidable crossing. We were going to have to force a crossing there. We got down to the Irrawaddy. It had quite a few skirmishes with the Japanese, and I'm still trying to remember where we. There was a place called Gun Copse, where one place where we'd bumped the Japs, and they dug in, sort of an open jungly oasis, I suppose you would call it, in a desert sort of an area. It was all arid in one place, and then you suddenly come across this place with jungle and a village. And we were advancing across this open space towards this village when we were, I can't remember whether it was this side of the Irrawaddy or the other place, other side. But anyway, it was in the region of the Irrawaddy where we came, bumped these Japanese, and we couldn't move because we were in the open, and they suddenly opened fire from the jungle, and we were caught in the open, and all we could do was to bury our nose in the ground and hope for the best. Anyway, to try and relieve the position, they called in an airstrike, and instead of coming, we could see them coming in, and they came in to dive bomb this so-called village, but instead of dive bombing the village, They dive bombed us. We were out in the open, and we could see the bombs coming down. And they, as they hit the ground, it exploded. So the earth opened up in front of us, but it wasn't directly in amongst us. Thank goodness. Otherwise, we wouldn't have survived. But we could. It was amazing, really. You could see the bombs coming down, exploding, and in front of your eyes. So the earth was thrown up. Anyway, they did eventually, after some time they realised that they were bombing the wrong place, and they did get in amongst the village and drop a few bombs, and then of course we we moved forward and with a flanking movement we got them out of it. But going, what happened here was the Japs were dug in these foxholes and they were letting us go through. And then they, after we'd gone through, because the rearmost troops weren't keeping up close enough, they were, we were going past these foxholes, which they covered themselves over with, and as we'd passed them, so they came up and were shooting people in the backsides. And we had quite a number of people shot up like that, quite a lot of casualties being shot in the back and in the buttocks and in the back legs. Quite a few casualties like that. Anyway, we eventually got down to the Irrawaddy, which I suppose it was something like a mile wide. It's a terrific river. I was a bit apprehensive, really, because I'd never taken to swimming, and I couldn't swim, and I could keep afloat, I suppose, but I wasn't a swimmer, and then I could see this river, which was a mile wide, and I was a little bit apprehensive. However, we gathered on a bank, and we were wondering what they were going to get us across in, because as far as we knew, we had no boats. You know, it had never crossed our mind before. And they were sort of thinking about strapping logs together and floating over on rafts and things like that. Because they told us, well, there's no boats available. They are wanted for the assault on the second front. Everything was, you know, when we wanted something was for the second front. It was never available for us. We had to make do. And anyway, we were spread out along the Irrawaddy. Of course, it takes quite a bit of preparation to make an assault across a river like that. And they managed to, they had some boats apparently in the division, which were fold up sort of canvas boats as far as I can remember, and they were operated by Royal Engineers and had an outboard engine on them. Anyway, these were brought up eventually, and we were alongside, we could see the Japs on the other side, obviously, you know, we knew they were there, and we knew that we were going to, it's not going to be an easy crossing. And anyway, our brigade, the 5th Brigade, were going to make the crossing. And we were at a place, a little village called Dewetti, and on the banks of the river. And I can remember one night, although we were most particular with guards, I mean, it was always, you were always on guard. It was a matter of you were 4 hours on guard and two off, you know, all the time. You couldn't sleep right the way through the night, never, and you were always dug into a position, and as we were here, and one night the Japs somehow managed to get in amongst us, and there was such an uproar. I mean, you just couldn't open up. It was just a matter of hand to hand fighting and hope for the best. However, it didn't last long before they decided that we were too strong for them, and off they went. But it shows how easy it is for, you know, the enemy to get in amongst you, and when you're not too prepared, you know, we're sort of taking it easy and thinking, oh wow, well, they're over there, we're over here. But it was the same as us. We were making patrols across the river to see where their positions were, as they were to us.
Were you in the hand-to-hand fighting yourself?
Yes. Oh, yes, they got in amongst us, and it was a matter of bayonet. It was no good to try and fire or use grenades because, you know, it was too close. There was nothing else you could do except hand-to-hand fighting. But they didn't want to put up too much of a fight because they soon went. I don't think they realised that we were there somehow. I don't know.
How close to the Japanese did you come?
Oh, well, they were in amongst all of us. We were...
You mean you could touch them?
Oh, yes, they were in amongst us. This was a frightening position, but there was only about half a dozen of them, that was all, in amongst a platoon, you know. And But it was you know, you could never really relax because you didn't know where they were. And of course, then when they realized that we were in position there, then they started to open up with their 75s, and another of our company just a little bit down from us, they took a lot of casualties from this 75 that was firing across the river. Anyway, yeah, see, the time had come now to make the assault across the river. We knew the other side was defended. We knew there were quite a few heavy machine guns, and also 75mm guns that they were using. The Camerons were to make an assault on the left-hand side across. I would say the Nagazan side, because that was the name of the village on the opposite side or nearabouts. The river, I would say, was about a mile wide. It seemed to rise and fall because there were sandbanks in a couple of places, and so it was going to be a little bit difficult. And there was an island north of the crossing where the Camerons were going to take, and they were going to try and put a gun on that island, and I think it was the Royal Welsh Fusiliers were going to go onto the island to give some kind of support. And the Worcesters were going to cross at the same time as the Camerons, downriver a little bit. And so there were going to be a couple of bridgeheads made on the other side. But the Worcesters, I should think, was the more difficult crossing, because if they went downriver too far, they would come immediately under fire from a heavy machine gun on a point that we knew was there. And so they had to keep upstream of that. However, the assault went all right as far as the Camerons were concerned. They got across all right, more or less. They were fired on, of course. And this was at night, the assaults. And the Worcesters, they as soon as they got in the middle stream, they were in trouble. And boats were capsizing, they were being fired on, they'd gone down too far in view of this machine gun, and they were being fired on and were suffering casualties, and as I say, the boats were overturning. They had to scramble back, which was quite a job, to our side of the river. So that was a bit of a shambles as far as the assault was concerned, but we still had the bridgehead made by the Camerons, which was very small, but it was a footing on the other side of the river. So they then decided to send us across to the Camerons and try and enlarge the bridgehead there. We set off. It was a bit hairy. These boats weren't very stable, and you know, the slightest movement, you felt that you were going to turn turtle. And the engines didn't seem to be very reliable. Some of them stopped, and everybody had to start paddling with their hands to try and get back to the side of the river they'd started from. However, we managed to get across. We were fired on, but we managed to get across into the bridgehead. And we got there, and it was quite a steep bank we had to get up over, and immediately we were into, I suppose it must have been about 8 foot high elephant grass. And if you've ever had to know what it's like to walk through elephant grass, it's a bit, especially with Japs roaming around. anyway, we were being shelled and machine gunned, and but we pushed on, and we managed to enlarge the bridgehead, and later they managed to get the Worcesters across, and of course that made some room to advance forward. Our advance now was objective now was Mandalay. As I said, on our left-hand side, the 19th Indian Division were still coming down alongside the river and had made a bridgehead across north of Mandalay, whereas our bridgehead had been safe southeast of Mandalay. And so we were to join up somewhere in the region of Mandalay. Anyway, our troubles weren't over. We were now more or less on open ground advancing, and the village of Negerson was taken, and from there we moved on towards Ava. I can remember one part of the advance here, because I'd never seen them before. This was the only time we advancing over open ground, and suddenly we found ourselves in the middle of a huge area of tomatoes. And as we were walking along, so we were picking these tomatoes and eating them. They were red, bright red. And as we walked along, we picked them and eat them. I'd never come across anything like it before in that part of the world. But it was a huge area of ripe tomatoes. And I can always remember, because afterwards, the old commanding officer, Colonel White, he thought, so what's happening? Because he was behind and we were advancing. And gosh, are they taking casualties, you know, keep on bending down like that? And he thought people were going down on the floor, you see. He couldn't see actually what was happening. He could see people going down. He didn't know what was happening. He thought that they were being fired on and they were falling down. In fact, we were picking tomatoes and he... It's most peculiar, that was. Anyway, we advanced on through Ava Bridge. Not very much opposition. Until, let's see, when was that? That must have been, yes, it was just after we crossed over the Irrawaddy. We were advancing, the Worcesters were now in front, and they'd reached a point where it was getting dark. We were following the axis of the road towards Mandalay, and it was a little bit hilly and rocky in these positions. Obviously, we couldn't walk along the road because the road was being covered by Japanese fire, and so we were forced onto the sides of the road. And at this point, it was a little bit rocky and hilly, and the Worcesters the end of the day, they decided that that was it. They wouldn't go any farther, and for some reason I never understood why, they decided that the Dorset should take up the lead battalion, because the Camerons were the other side of the road on the left hand side, and we were on the right hand side. They decided that the Dorsets would advance on a peculiar position, a hilly position, a nighttime advance. Now, why they decided on that particular night, I do not know. But we walked, went through the Worcester Regiment. They were in what we called was a nulla, which was like a dry riverbed. They were resting up there, and we went through. It was black, pitch black night, and we could see that this before we went that this was a bit of a hill with a black coloured pagoda on it, nothing else. Just this black pagoda, and it was named afterwards Dirty Pagoda. It was one of these little pagodas that you found in odd places, you know, with bells on it, which chimed out in the wind. There was no one there, and anyway, we advanced through. We got to the top. The battalion were divided into companies, of course. And there was the forward company, which was C Company, and they went over the top and down on the forward facing side of the hill. We went to the top and to the left. Battalion headquarters were in the area of the pagoda, and the other companies were back. We got to our positions and without any opposition, and we started to dig in. Of course, it's night, it was quiet, nothing, and then suddenly there's this clamour of entrenching tools that we carried to dig in with. Hard rock. It was rock hard. And you could hear these noises of us digging in for miles. And we thought, my God, man, this is a bit precarious, you know, because we knew we were on a hill. And anyway, no patrol. Well, I think a patrol had been sent out, and they said that there's no Japs. So we started to dig in on this hill. And I suppose it was a matter of not being able to dig in as much as you had to build up to get a bit of protection. And anyway, we, daybreak started to come, and all of a sudden there was a hell of a machine gun barrage came up, and it swept that hill, and we could hear down on the front where C Company were, shrieks and screams and shouts, and we knew that they were taking casualties, and they were sweeping the hill. We could hear the bullets going over the top and striking our positions there. We were taking casualties. Jimmy Wells, our platoon commander, was one of them. He was shot in the legs, and we were taking casualties, as were everybody else. And there were only about two Japanese machine guns that were doing the damage, and obviously it seemed to me that they knew somehow or another that we were going to advance, and their machine guns were in a fixed position, and they knew exactly where we were going to be. Anyway, this machine gun fire, I mean, there was nothing we could do. We just had to pull back. We couldn't sustain the injuries, casualties we were taking. I mean, the cover was, there was no cover. And so we had to pull back. And anyway, we took a terrific, I can't remember how many casualties, but my friend that I joined up with, Jim Peavoy, this is where he was shot and killed at Dirty Pagoda. And a lot more of our casualties. And as I say, Jim Wells was one of them, and he never rejoined the battalion. I'd never seen him since. But I know he was shot up pretty badly. And anyway, this is what had happened. They withdrew and obviously set these two positions up as an ambush, and it was a perfect ambush because their machine guns were such that they just swept the hill with them, and after they'd done the damage, they just pulled out and went, and that was it. And they caused all those casualties, and I can't to this day understand why we had to make that attack at night. There must be some reason, but I've never been able to find out why. Why it was necessary to make that stupid attack at night and take up position like that. But there we are. These things happen. And, you know, there must have been some reason. And as I say, it's not for us to question.